Welcome to the second part of our Explains Trilogy series, Why Bitcoin Exists. Today we're going to be exploring the 40-year history of technology and cypherpunks that led to the creation of Bitcoin. With Bitcoin seemingly in a bear market, even as price hovers around the mid-60,000s, this is the perfect time to increase your knowledge and fortify your resolve in why Bitcoin is the solution humanity has been waiting for to fix this insane monetary system. The Bitcoin price is driven by two key factors. One, people's emotions, and two, an economy controlled by the government and banks, which thrives on fear and panic. So don't let temporary price action shake you out. Bitcoin hasn't changed. The market will take time to catch up to the immutable truth of Bitcoin and the time chain. In the meantime, focus on the three S's, study, stack, and secure Bitcoin, because when price takes off again soon, your head will already be in the game. With that said, let's dive into some knowledge with Bitcoin Well Explains, Why Bitcoin Exists, the Cypherpunk War for Digital Cash. Most people think Bitcoin just appeared out of nowhere in 2008, a miraculous invention by a mysterious genius named Satoshi Nakamoto. But that's not even close to the truth. Bitcoin wasn't a miracle. It was the final move in a 40-year chess game between privacy activists and the state. You see, by the 1990s, the internet was starting to come into its own. It promised freedom, connection, a new way to interact with the world. But a small group of mathematicians realized something everyone else missed. The internet was going to create the ultimate surveillance state. Every click, every purchase, every message, all tracked, stored, and controlled. And so they set out to build a system where trade was free, private, and uncensorable. A system the government couldn't shut down. Unfortunately, they failed. Again and again. Until finally, building on top of decades of failures, one of them didn't. This is the story of the cypherpunks' war to create digital cash. Who were the cypherpunks? In 1992, a mailing list started in San Francisco. Three men, Eric Hughes, Timothy C. May, and John Gilmore. They called themselves the cypherpunks, a play on cipher, code, and cyberpunk, the sci-fi genre about tech dystopias, made famous by William Gibson and Philip K. Dick. In 1993, Eric Hughes wrote what became their manifesto. In it, he said, "Privacy is necessary for an open society in the electronic age. We cannot expect governments, corporations, or other large faceless organizations to grant us privacy." This was 1993, before Google, before Facebook, before the NSA PRISM scandals, before smartphones tracked your every move. They saw it coming a mile away. The cypherpunks had a philosophy, and it was simple. First, privacy isn't about hiding crimes. It's about autonomy. It's about the right to exist without someone watching. Second, cypherpunks write code. They didn't protest. They didn't petition. They built the future they wanted with their own hands. Third, cryptography, the math of codes and secrets, is the only tool that can tip the balance of power from the state back to the individual. So they started building, and they started failing. The first major attempt came from David Chaum, the godfather of digital privacy.
Either we're going to be moving towards a world in which people are data subjects, or alternatively, people have control over their own information.
In the 1980s, Chaum invented something called blind signatures. This was revolutionary. It allowed you to pay online without the bank knowing what you bought. Think about that. You could transact digitally and the payment processor couldn't spy on you. This was the dream. In 1989, Chom launched DigiCash, a company built around this technology.
How should we structure the network to make it effective so that it can really grow and attract all the kinds of services and users that it will need so that it can predominate?
There still was not a strictly digital-only currency until the DigiCash company was started by David Chom in 1990.
And it worked. Technically, it was brilliant. But here's the problem. It was a company. It had a CEO. It had offices. It had employees. And it had bank accounts. In 1998, DigiCash went bankrupt. Business failure. Poor execution. It happens. But the cypherpunks learned something critical. Centralized entities can go broke, or they can be pressured by banks and governments. If you have a headquarters, you have a weakness. If you have a CEO, you have a target. The lesson was clear. Digital cash had to be decentralized. No company, no office, no single point of failure. The next attempt came in 1996, a project called eGold. The concept was simple. Digital currency backed 100% by physical gold in a vault. You could send eGold online, and it represented real gold stored somewhere secure. And it worked. It grew to millions of users, billions of dollars in transactions. It proved that people wanted non-fiat digital money. But in 2007, the U.S. government raided the offices. They seized the gold, they arrested the founders, they charged them with money laundering and operating an unlicensed money-transmitting business. eGold was shut down. The lesson? If your money lives on a central server, the government can turn it off. If there's a CEO, they can arrest him. If there's a company, they can raid it. For digital cash to survive, it had to be decentralized. It had to have no leader, no office, and no server to unplug. The cypherpunks were learning, but they still hadn't solved the puzzle. By the late 1990s and early 2000s, the cypherpunks had the goal, decentralization. But they needed the technology. And slowly, the pieces started coming together. Piece A came in the 1970s as public key cryptography. This was the breakthrough that made digital privacy possible. It allowed you to have an identity, a wallet address, without attaching your real name or ID to it. You could prove you own something without revealing who you are. That's the foundation of Bitcoin wallets. Piece B came in 1997 with proof of work. Adam Back, a British cypherpunk, created something called Hashcash. It was originally designed to stop email spam. Here's how it worked. To send an email, your computer had to solve a small math puzzle. It took a few seconds, not a big deal for one email, but if you tried to send a million spam emails, your computer would be tied up for days. Later, people realized this same concept, proof of work, could be used to mint digital coins, to create digital scarcity. If it costs energy to create a coin, you couldn't just copy and paste it like a file. PC came in 1998 through two different visionaries. Wei Dai proposed something called B-Money. His idea, a decentralized ledger where everyone keeps a copy. No central server, no single database, everyone has the records. Nick Szabo, around the same time, proposed BitGold. His idea, chain together proof of work to create unforgeable costliness. Each coin is expensive to produce, so it can't be faked. These were brilliant ideas, but there was one unsolved problem, the double spend problem, to be specific. Without a central bank, how do you make sure someone doesn't send the same digital coin to two people at once? With physical gold, you can't do this. You hand the coin to someone, and now you don't have it anymore. Simple. But with digital files, you can copy them. You can send the same piece of eCash to Alice and Bob at the same time. Szabo and Dai couldn't figure out how to keep the ledger in sync without a central referee, without someone in charge saying, this transaction is valid, this one isn't. And so their ideas remained ideas, theories, unbuilt. Now, fast forward to 2008, the great financial crisis, banks are failing, Lehman Brothers collapses, the government steps in and bails them out by printing billions of dollars. People are furious. Trust in the system is gone, and the cypherpunks, they're watching, waiting. By this point, they have everything they need. They have the philosophy, privacy, decentralization, and freedom. They have the cryptography, public key encryption, and they have proof of work, Adam Back's Hashcash. They have the decentralized theory, Wei Dai's B-Money, Nick Szabo's BitGold. They just need one final genius insight to stitch these disparate parts together to solve the double spend problem without a central authority. Then, on October 31st, 2008, Halloween, a link is posted to the cryptography mailing list. The subject line? Bitcoin, P2P e-cash paper. The author? Someone no one had ever heard of, Satoshi Nakamoto. In the next video, we'll break down exactly what Satoshi did and go over his white paper in depth, and why, after 40 years of failure, this time it didn't fail. Because Bitcoin isn't just better money, Bitcoin is the weapon the cypherpunks built to win the war. And 17 years later, the war is still being fought. But this time, freedom is winning.